there are so many bright spots that I think people just need to see that. And it will start changing that perception. So now it's not this negative view that's put out in the media and TV shows and movies of what schools can look like. And they start seeing some of the positive.
Welcome to Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I'm your host and chief goddess of the PASS Foundation, Annalise Corbin. We know the current model for education is obsolete. It was designed to create fleets of assembly line workers, not the thinkers and problem solvers needed today. We've seen the innovations that are possible within education, and it's our goal to leave the box behind and reimagine what education can look like in your own backyard. Welcome to today's episode of Learning Unboxed. As always, I'm excited to talk with another great innovator in the transformative education space. And joining us today is Kevin Stoller, co-founder of K-12 and founder of Second Class Foundation. So Kevin, welcome to Learning Unboxed.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited about this. I believe you're in Columbus, Ohio too, right?
I am, yes.
Yes, that makes me like extra excited knowing how many years I spent in Columbus.
Exactly. And I'm hoping we get to talk about that a little bit as well. But before we really sort of jump in and understand what the Second Class Foundation is really sort of all about from your perspective in the weeds, let's set a little bit of context for our listeners. Second Class Foundation's mission is to improve education through the use of media. Schools have been portrayed in the media for some time. The past 40 plus years, it's been exactly the same. And it's hard to believe that a movie from 1986 could still shape the perception of what most schools in America look like.
Bueller.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. and of course, you know, it still turns up in popular culture. We use that in so many different ways, and it is crazy that it has persisted so much. But we know that we need to change that sort of perception, and that's part of what the work of the Second Class Foundation is all about, including several projects that you have underway, one of which I'm really excited to talk about today, which is your new docuseries called What We Showed Them. So, Kevin, let's start with the why. What on earth were you thinking?
Oh, well, I'm going to start out first of what really got me down this path. And it actually started back in Columbus, Ohio, actually Worthington, Ohio. I was living there for a while and I stumbled into this area where I ended up having a company that sold school furniture. So back in 2014 is really like that turning point where, and I remember I was walking into Brookside Middle School in Worthington. I don't know if you're familiar with, but but it is the most like prototype, like just what you would expect of a school. Like I've been in hundreds of these schools where you walk mm-hmm. in and I'm walking into the lobby and this time it just felt different. And I'm trying to figure out what is going on. There is a buzz that's coming from this wing of the school. And I go in to check in at the front desk because I was meeting with the principal and he comes out. And I was fortunate to become pretty good friends with him. He was one of those principals that like just the staff love, the kids love. Like it was one where people like would move, would try to figure out where they can buy a house so that they can have their kids go to that school. And I'm walking down the hallway with him and I'm just like, what is going on over here? Like, and he just gives me the smirk and he's just like, come on, just follow me. I'll show you. And we walk in and he takes me to a fourth grade classroom and we're standing at the doorway. And I'm watching this teacher do something that I had never seen before. And I'd been in hundreds of classrooms before. Like I've been doing this for about 5 years at that point. And so got to see a whole bunch of different schools. And I'm watching this teacher just do this like dance through the classroom where she starts out with kids in like a U-shape around her and talks about what they're going to do for this lesson. And then she claps her hands and she goes, all right, break. And they go and they separate out into groups of three or four, start working together. She's just like working the room and going through and talking and listening. And you start seeing a couple kids break away who are like needed some alone time to try to figure out something. And then she'll get the teacher would get everyone's attention and be like, hey, guys, look what they're doing over here. And somebody immediately would just be presenting to the rest of the class, like on the spot. And then towards the end, she would gather them back. She would like, come on, huddle up again. And that was the first time that I'd really seen this exposure that it can be different. Like I had only known it where it was this front of the classroom. There's a teacher that is basically just being giving a lecture to the kids where it's typically, you know, like that perception that you get in Ferris Bueller and everywhere else in the media of just this boring of like, I'm just here to receive this education that the teacher is going to give me. And that was really the spark that shifted our whole focus as a company for the last 10 years to really saying we're an education company, but we're mission driven on how do we improve education. And because of that path, and I know this is a super long answer, so interrupt me.
No, it's all good. Keep going.
When we're going down this path of us being a mission driven company, someone on our team came up with the idea of we're like, you know, I watch all these like makeover shows on HGTV. You know, where I see a house like before and after. And she goes, where's like the extreme home makeover, but like a school edition? So for a few years, we were going down the path of like, well, how do we do this? Because it's one of those things where that perception just becomes reality for people, where if that's all they know what school looks like, they fight it of like what of any other way that it could be. And so when we went down the path of trying to produce and really sell the show to a Netflix or one of the networks, we realized pretty quickly that we were going to be the ones that were going to have to do it because they wanted the money side of it. And we had the mission side of it. Yeah. So so we ended up going down the path of creating a nonprofit first to just lay the foundation. And that's where Second Class Foundation came about. Mm-hmm. And really it's this blank canvas that allows us to create media and be able to do storytelling to really drive change, to get beyond the walls of education. And that's really what's led into one of our first projects that's coming out is this docuseries of what we show them.
So before we dig into that, and I'm really excited about that piece of the conversation, though, I guess that one of the things, because you're 100% correct, right? And I even know the teacher you're talking about, right, in that example. And so, you know, when we encounter that type of learning environment, and certainly that's at PASS, that's what we believe and advocate for on an ongoing and everyday sort of basis. We live sort of in that ecosystem. But you're right. It's not that it's not the norm. We are seeing more and more of this, especially post-pandemic. And, you know, we're all thrilled about that. But the public understanding about what's possible, what school, if you will, to use that very old term, right? So what educating, right, could and should look like is very, very different than what we believe we understand it to be. Right. And so I'm super curious about your perspective before we get into the docuseries about this idea of the storytelling mechanism as an opportunity to really, really change the narrative. Because, you know, storytelling has been around for a really long time, and yet we still have an old school perception. Right. So why do you think that is? And where's that disconnect been around changing that perception? I guess, yeah. This is not a new thing. However, we're still living sort of the old thing that we understand.
For sure. Well, you're right. I spend a lot of time and I go to a lot of educational conferences around the country. And without a doubt, I mean, what I explained to you may have been really cutting edge 10 years ago. It is really becoming more mainstream now, which is awesome. It's great to do that. And because of that, we have a lot more research that substantiates that and it makes it a little easier. However, if I was just going to make a big blanket statement on us that are in the education sector, we do a really poor job of letting other people know what's actually going on and what we've learned and how it's different. So everyone feels like they're an expert of school because they went to school at some point.
Correct. Yeah. And I think that's usually key, right? Because we all did it, therefore we know. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that from families. Well, you know, I did it this way. It was good enough for me. You know, you hear all of that sort of things, and I'm sure you've heard them too.
Yeah.
But it is interesting, right? It's a rare field where literally everybody in the community is an expert in some capacity.
For sure. And even like as a parent who's going through, it's like I'm rarely in my own kid's school. So right. I'm rarely actually seeing how really like education is delivered and how it's become more of where it's like student-centered and really having mm-hmm. them having more of like a personalized learning experience. And I know that's not everywhere, but I think this is also part of the reason why we wanted to do it is, one, we want to be able to take those like I'm one of those where like every time there's an image of schools, like whether it's in like a news story or anything like that, I'm always looking in the background and be like, how are they portraying schools?
Yeah.
And most of the time they're taking this like B-roll footage from 20 years ago, and it's still this perception. So it just reinforces that perception of like, oh, school hasn't changed from when I was in school.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can start changing that, it really drives change. And we know this. We know that movies and documentaries, like the entertainment side of our society, is always what drives culture change. I mean, mm-hmm. you could see it from examples of, you can just say, like what Al Gore did with climate change, like his documentary really drove a lot, like it inspired a lot of people to take action to that. You even look at just like TV shows like Will and Grace and the perception of what the LGBT community was. That made a big impact. So when you look at like the impact of what the media can do, that's why we're trying to produce entertaining shows that anyone would watch to start changing that perception. Because there are a lot of just like educational documentaries and things like that. And I watch a lot of them because I'm interested mm-hmm. in it. And I feel like most of the people on the education side, they may watch it, but it's usually not just like the average person who would be pulling up Netflix and saying, what am I going to yeah. watch tonight? It usually doesn't hit their radar because it usually does have a very similar tone and message to it.
Right.
And that's one of the big things. Like, how can we produce entertaining content that's going to meet people wherever they're at, but also start changing their perception of like, oh, school doesn't have to be the way it was.
Absolutely. And I agree. And so with that in mind, then, Kevin, so tell us about what we show them. And also, as we have this conversation, help our listeners understand the concept and the, I guess, really the drive, right, for the idea that we want to make a docuseries about education that's also, it's a combination of entertainment and yet we're trying to really sort of push perceptions and knowledge. And I think part of what you're really pushing here is this idea that innovation is something that we can embrace, and we can embrace it as part of that educational paradigm moving forward.
Yeah. The first episode of the docuseries that we produce is really, it sets the stage, but mm-hmm. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that first episode, but really, and then talk about where we see that first season going. And I'm just going to be really upfront right now for you and your audience. We need help to make this a reality. We've self-funded the first episode.
Yeah.
And that's really where we're at right now, is we're like, how do we continue to produce content and shows like this? Because the idea is that we're going to intertwine a whole bunch of different schools and experiences and things throughout the country to intertwine where, so we get a really good idea of the landscape of what's going on in America, but done in a really entertaining way where you get the character development. Because I'm a big fan of like all these docuseries that are out there. There's so many of them. And, you know, the one that pops in like right now that I'm watching is Welcome to Wrexham,
yep.
which is, you know, Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney, who are actors, and they buy a soccer team in the UK. And I'm not a soccer person, but the stories of the people in the community, and you get attached to them. And
yeah, you do. And you're right. It's highly entertaining, like you're sucked in.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you really feel like you get to know these people on a personal level. And that's really our goal, is that to be able to tell these stories over time. The problem is education moves really slow. So the idea of being able to intertwine other communities and be able to show the progress that happens over a year or two and be able to really connect with the characters that are going through it. So the first episode kind of sets the stage of a school in Idaho. And what's really interesting, and we had an amazing film crew that did a lot of research to try to find out some of these stories. And that's what we're so excited about, is we have like all these stories we want to tell. But the first one is one that's just happening right now. Mm-hmm. It is about a community that has a school that is literally crumbling to the ground. Their gym collapsed 30 years ago. But if you talk to the people in there and you start interacting with the students, it is the most vibrant school of these like amazing people that just are acting like it's not even going on around them. But they are literally in crisis right now. You can see the cracks in the wall. You can hear the train coming by near there. And as the train goes by, you can feel the shake that happens to it. And the problem in this one is that in Idaho, they have a law that requires 66% of the local community to say yes to be able to pass a bond to build a new school. So you look at this, they have passed their bond in any other state in the country. They've been passing it because they've been getting in the 50, 55% of the local community, which everywhere else would be like, that's like a runaway victory if you have a 55%. Exactly. Right. But in Idaho, the law is that you have to have 66%. And the reality is they are never going to get 66%. So it is this like tragedy that is just like unfolding, and we're watching it happen and just like waiting for it to happen. So the first episode is a little heavier than we would do, but it was one that we felt like we had to capture it right now. And it's on, you know, it's going to the ballot again later this year. But the hard part about this is when we were talking through it with the film crew, it was like, this is not about tearing apart the local community and trying to be like, it's the voters' fault. Yeah. It is almost impossible to get 66% on any issue.
On any issue, anywhere, right? Yeah.
Anywhere.
Yeah.
So this is not about like trying to break down that community and be like, why are you voting no on it? They have local support. They have people that want to do that. It's about trying to change that. And then obviously the characters behind it. It's just the people that are in that first episode, you just like, you feel like you just feel how much they care about the students and the community. And that's the type of sense that we really want our film crew to be able to capture as we go around the country. And, you know, and we know these other stories that are in the works, and some are a lot more lighter and entertaining and just really interesting characters that you just want to, you want to see, and you want to spend more time with them, and being able to show where different communities are right now as it comes to school. And so that's what gets me excited, is getting people to understand like, hey, we can do this in a really entertaining way, but we can also do it where it makes an impact.
Are you ready to join the movement to revolutionize education? Stay tuned for the full unveiling of my forthcoming book, Hacking School, 5 Strategies to Link Learning to Life, where we'll dive deeper into these topics and unlock key strategies to educational transformation. If you want to stay in the know, sign up for notifications at pastfoundation.org/hackingschool.
I would assume as you and the film crew are out working in these different communities, digging into these amazing stories, that quite frankly, you get the beautiful privilege of getting able to share and to tell, right? That's probably really, really fulfilling in that sense. But I also wonder, right, you know, as you're hearing and you're digging into these stories, you know, you're collecting a sort of a set of I don't want to call them best practices, but you're collecting a series or a set of intriguing opportunities that communities are capitalizing on in one form or another, right? Because ultimately, at the end of the day, I assume that the stories that you're telling are success stories that have been or will be sustainable, right? And that's the magic of us really trying to sort of scale the really great things that are happening in education. And it's really hard to do because it's often very difficult to pull apart and say, this is the magic bean in this scenario.
It is. And you're right. I mean, it is a huge privilege that I get to see some of those innovations and the schools that are doing it completely different. And to me, though, that's what gets our team fired up. And what really drives us is you start seeing like, oh, wow, this is totally different. Mm-hmm. This is real, like the light that you can see just come on for students that are in there, and then and teachers as well, because, you know, if you talk to teachers right now, like a lot of them are struggling in certain scenarios where they are basically told this is the only thing you can do. Like we are wasting so much talent with our teachers right now, and I don't want to make a total blanket statement to that, but in large aspects, we are. And then you see these pockets,
right,
where you are doing it differently, and you see everything that we all know and love and want our teachers to be doing. And you see like the taking all that those shackles off of them and saying, go do what you do.
Yeah.
And that's amazing. Like there are so many stories. We've built a really good relationship. So I moved from Ohio to Arizona. At Arizona State University, they have a model where they're doing these team teaching that they're rolling out through districts, and you know, the work that you guys are doing. There are so many bright spots that I think people just need to see that in action, and it will start changing that perception. So now it's not this negative view that's put out in the media and TV shows and movies of what schools can look like, and they start seeing some of the positive.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I'm super curious because we didn't touch on this yet, but before we move on, I really want to know. So that school in Idaho, that the building is physically falling down around them, you know, what is the magic? Why in that location, given the scenario they have, you know, one of the first things you said about that school is, you know, it's a happy place. It's a buzz. There's all this amazing stuff that's happening. So why? What is it about that place, that community, those people, right, that are making that despite the physical limitations of their space, that it's still a great place to be a student, to be a teacher, to learn in their community?
Yeah, this is my unscientific method of being in the industry for a while. I truly believe it comes down to leadership. You can see it. You can see it when you have a principal, when you have a superintendent that views their job is to cut out all that crap and let teachers do what they do best. That's the biggest difference. It's that leadership really does flow all the way through to the entire, like literally the entire community. And, you know, like that example I told you in Worthington, that one of those principals that did that, you know, and he continues to do it. But to me, that is the one piece, which, you know, kind of sidetrack is that we've recognized that we actually started an organization 3 years ago called the Education Leaders Organization, ELO. And it is to address that of like, how do we help the leaders, those change makers, become better leaders and surround them by others and then also build that pipeline? But it is, in my mind, the number one factor of success is that if you have somebody that is going to drive that culture and that change, there's no faster way to do it. I don't know your experience. I mean, do you feel the same way, or like what's your perspective from it?
You know, I do feel the same way, but I would also say that my perspective also has elements of recognizing that we do need great leaders absolutely. But we need community champions as well, right? And those community champions can be our building leader. They can be individual educators. They can be families. And honestly, I think sometimes the best champions that we have are teenagers in the community, right? Who have embraced an opportunity and said, I'm going to make this mine and I'm going to be really successful in this space by doing things differently. That seems to be one of those things that allows that transformative process to really, really accelerate. So I agree with you. We need champions, and we need those champions to come from across the ecosystem. But it often starts with leaders that are willing to be brave enough in many ways, right, to say, let's go ahead and try something different, recognizing that we're going to fall down a lot. And that's going to be okay. We're going to embrace that culture of failure and rapid learning from that experience and make it a positive. So that would be the way I would sort of think about it.
I definitely agree with that. Yeah, because a lot of times that leadership, people think, well, the leadership comes with a title. But it really doesn't. I mean, leaders are coming from all over the place. And some of the best ones are when you see it coming from the students. When you see that leadership, Oh, it's so inspiring and so great to see that.
It is, you know, and honestly, you know, I say this on this program all the time, so my listeners, I'm sure I have no doubt are tired of hearing me saying it, but, you know, kids will do and do amazing things, and we just need to get the adults to get out of the way, right? You know, and to just let go of that sort of old school mentality, and we started this conversation with this, right? The idea of that teacher at the front of the room, providing a lecture to, you know, students in a row, right? You know, that's not the world we live in at all. It's not the world that the students are ultimately going to find themselves in. And so we're doing a huge, huge disservice to our entire communities by continuing to use that as the model by which we pretend to educate.
Without a doubt. Yep. And I know when I get on this topic too, people be like, well, sometimes you do need to lecture. And I'm like, I get it. Sometimes you do, but not all the time. And, you know, like, one of the big influences for me was the book End of Average. I don't know if you're familiar with that one, that just really hit home to me was when you start seeing and be like, hey, everywhere else in society, we are trying to personalize things. And it doesn't mean that you can't learn from a lecture. You can sometimes, but sometimes you need to be able to study alone. Sometimes you need to be able to talk through it with a peer. Sometimes you need to actually teach it to someone else.
Exactly.
And knowing that it changes throughout the day, and it's not just like, hey, I'm an extrovert, I'm an introvert. No, it's trying to figure out that we have very much like staggered approaches. And, you know, like sometimes you need to be in front talking to people, and other times you need to just be at their side listening and being there to support.
I would agree with that. And I think that one of the other things that's really interesting to me is, and I guess it's a quality of really, really great and innovative educators, and therefore also innovative leaders in those education spaces, I would say it's the same, is the recognition that what I did today in my classroom, which might have been wildly successful, right, for the students that are here with me in this moment, has a 50-50 at best chance of being an utter failure if I did it the same way next year, in part because the participants have changed. And I think that's one of those big disconnects in the world of, you know, formal education in particular, is this idea that we can change our curriculum, we can change the way we want to do things, our methodologies, take your pick, every 3 to 5 years. Well, no, it needs to be literally almost every class, because what works for the kids right now won't work for the kids tomorrow, because they're not the same.
Yes. And we're seeing it like way more rapidly than probably any other time in history, how quickly it's changing. And I see it in my 3 kids, you know, every day at home. I mean, I have a 16-year-old, a 12-year-old, and an 8-year-old. So you see the differences. And, you know, the 8-year-old generation that I have, the 8-year-olds are very different than what I see from my oldest and the 16-year-olds. Like, it's happening that quickly.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I think that the rate and pace of change and acceleration is only going to increase. It's not going to normalize by any stretch of the imagination. I agree with that. You know, I always like to think about, as I sort of wrap these conversations with such amazing people that we get to talk with, about recognizing that there are folks out there listening who come from very different environments, very different ecosystems, very different sets of experiences. But the takeaway from our conversation is, in many ways, I think, the way we think about our story and the journey and the opportunity that we have to share and tell that story can be really compelling within our communities. So given your work, what would you tell that educator that's sitting out there saying, I'm doing these really incredible things, but no one's paying attention, and I'm not being able to have a bigger, broader impact inside the community or the school in which I sit? What would you tell that educator about how to move forward?
Yeah, and I'm always cautious on this one because I don't want to put more on the teacher's plate on there, because I get the frustration of we're being asked to do more and more and more. However, that whole point where leadership can come from anywhere, it doesn't come with the title. I think we are in this amazing period of time where anyone with a phone or a social media account can have crazy impact. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's really important to tell the stories.
Yeah.
And I think they can probably tell the stories better than anyone else. They're going to be able to tell a story better than a communications person, at the district level or anything like that. So I know, again, these blanket statements are always really hard. Some they may not be allowed to share that much, but we see it a lot. We see it, where TikTok, Instagram, you can see the impact of some of the teachers who can really find an audience pretty quickly by telling these stories, because people want to see inspiring change and stories like that. So I would encourage as much as you can and push the envelope as much as you can and wherever you're comfortable from, but being able to tell those stories and be able to talk about those moments, those light bulb moments, those things that only a teacher usually gets to see, tell those stories. Yeah. I think obviously the negative always gets more attention. So any of those positive ones that can be told, the better. And it's part of, obviously one of my big issues is that most of the time in the media, it's viewed as negative. If it's in the news, it's usually because there's something horrible that happened in there. I do think it's on us and all the teachers and ones to take some of that responsibility and be like, you know what, I'm going to tell the good stories too. And be able to share that and the good, the bad, just that human relationship, that human experience. People want to see it. It's compelling. And you have the platform. I mean, we didn't have that. We didn't have that 20 years ago.
Right.
Right now we do. And that's what it is inspiring, is you can see some of those videos and some of those stories and really being able to kind of get that inside view of what it's really like to be a teacher or a student right now. And I'd love to see more of that.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And everybody wants to feel great about the work that they're doing. And, there are such amazing positive stories that are out there to be told. So
that being said too, if you have amazing ones, all at secondclassfoundation.org, please send them out your way. I mean, really for us, when we're evaluating is we're trying to find the compelling characters and stories that are just going to continue to get people interested and saying hey, this doesn't have to be about how a school is horrible and not funded. And, Abbott Elementary, I really have issues with. I hate the fact that that's the predominant school show out there right now, because it just reiterates that same stereotype that we need to break away from.
Yeah. Hollywood needs to get on board with the rest of us in the real world, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. Thank you so much, Kevin, for making time out of your day to chat with us and share about what's going on with what we show them. I'm super looking forward to more of that. And I really would encourage our listeners to check that out. And again, as Kevin said, if you've got amazing people doing really cool, awesome things, reach out. Let's share that with Kevin so we can get more of these amazing stories out there in the world. So I love that. Thank you so much, Kevin.
Thank you. It's great talking with you.
You as well.
Thank you for joining us for Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I want to thank my guests and encourage you all to be part of the conversation. Meet me on social media at Annalise Corbin and join me next time as we stand up, step back, and lean in to reimagine education.